Envision this. You are a primary care physician in an outpatient clinic. Today you're seeing a 23-year-old female complaining of headaches. She tells you, "These headaches are really getting to me. It's bad enough to have a headache, but add in the light, the vomiting, it's just too much." The patient elaborates, "When I get one, it can last a couple of days. These are my usual headaches. Been having them for years. My roommate convinced me to come in and see if there's anything more that can be done for them." Upon further questioning, you find out that the headache is unilateral, throbbing, and she describes it as an 8 out of 10 pain, and that she deals with the headaches by laying down in a cool, dark room while waiting for improvement. She has tried ibuprofen and acetaminophen without impact, and a detailed history does not reveal any additional concerns. You notice that she's wearing sunglasses and is obviously uncomfortable when you turn up the lights to examine her. Her vital signs are normal, and except for being photophobic, her exam is normal. What information can you offer your patient regarding her headaches, and how would you manage her condition? Welcome to Audio Bricks. This is Ed Barnes breaking down the migraine cluster and tension headaches in your ears. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Compare and contrast the clinical features of primary headache syndromes to include migraine, cluster, and tension headaches. 2. Differentiate migraine aura from other transient neurologic disorders. 3. Discuss the mechanism of central nervous system sensitization, pain referral, and the interaction of neural structures. 4. Outline which patient warrants radiologic or other lab evaluations for headache. And 5. Describe the treatment of patients with headache disorders and potential complications of the treatments. Headaches are an unavoidable fact of life and often can be the result of sitting through one too many lectures. However, they can become debilitating and get in the way of daily life, especially when they become recurrent. Some headaches have symptoms other than head pain, but we typically think of headache pain relative to its location, how intense it is, and how long it lasts. Part 1. What are the primary headache syndromes? There are three major recurrent primary headache syndromes that we will discuss in this section: migraine, cluster, and tension. We call them primary headaches because they do not arise as a result of another underlying disease or medical condition. The headache itself is the disease. These headaches are also sometimes referred to as benign because they do not relate to any underlying malignant pathology such as a tumor, severe hypertension, or other more malignant conditions. As we discuss these different types of headache, take note of how they differ from one another with regard to their pattern of distribution. Migraine headaches routinely present with pain that aligns to one side of the face, and the pattern extends from the front of the forehead down through the maxillary regions of the same side. A cluster headache's pattern traditionally is unilateral and in and around the eye, and tension headaches have been described by patients as a band-like pattern that squeezes the head like a headband. In addition to these patterns, make sure you pay close attention to each of the headache's clinical presentation, demographics, signs, and symptoms. Let's dig a bit deeper into migraine headaches. Migraine headaches are characterized by a throbbing pain that can last anywhere from 4 to 3 days and can be incredibly debilitating in those affected. Along with being described as throbbing or pulsatile, the pain associated with migraines is usually unilateral in the pattern that we discussed previously. Aura is a unique feature that is experienced by about 25% of patients with migraines. Migraine auras are neurologic symptoms that usually precede but may also accompany the headache. The aura can include symptoms such as visual hallucinations, ear ringing, and paresthesia. Visual auras are the most common type and typically present as phosphenes, a bright spot in the field of vision, or scotoma, a black spot in the field of vision. Aside from the auras, Migraines are also associated with photophobia, an aversion to light, phonophobia, aversion to sound, and an aversion to movement. Like tension headaches, migraines can be triggered by emotional stress. However, migraines can also have unique triggers such as visual stimuli. Migraine headaches occur with a prevalence of 12% in the general population and tend to affect women 3 times more than men. Now, let's pivot to cluster headaches. These headaches typically cause excruciating attacks of pain that occur around the eye or on the side of the head. Patients with cluster headaches are agitated and restless. They may pace the floor, weep, rock back and forth, or bang their heads against a wall in desperation. As mentioned before, a key feature of these headaches is that the pain is unilateral, meaning it only occurs on one side of the head, though it can switch sides during an attack. The attacks are also relatively short-lived, lasting anywhere from 15 minutes to 3 hours, and they can occur in clusters as frequently as 8 times in one day. For each patient, the cluster headaches occur characteristically at the same time each day and during the same months of the year. Patients that suffer from cluster headaches can also experience autonomic symptoms that coincide with the pain, including lacrimation, which is teary eyes, bloodshot eyes, runny nose, and nasal congestion. These symptoms occur on the same side as the pain. These headaches are idiopathic, meaning without any attributable cause, with no distinct triggers. The lifetime prevalence of these headaches is roughly 0.1%, and they affect men 4 times as frequently as they do women. Moving on to tension headaches. The tension headache is the most prevalent type of headache in the general population. Unlike migraines and cluster headaches, the pain that occurs in tension headaches is bilateral and dull in nature. It also differs from cluster headaches in duration, frequently lasting 4 to 6 hours. The pain often is described as a painfully tight band wrapped around one's head. Among the most common triggers is mental stress. There are no unusual symptoms that accompany these headaches. Women are more likely than men to experience tension headaches, but the prevalence is quite high for both sexes, roughly 80% in a lifetime. Let's stop here for a quiz. A man experiencing unilateral frequent headaches that last roughly 1 hour is likely suffering from what type of headache syndrome? He is most likely suffering from cluster headaches. Part 2. More on migraines and auras. As we discussed earlier, migraines frequently occur, roughly 25% of the time, along with the neurologic phenomena known as auras. Migraine auras can be mistaken for those that occur in other transient neurologic disorders such as transient ischemic attack, or TIA, seizure, and presyncope. One aspect of migraine auras that distinguishes them from other auras is their acute onsets. Alarmingly, some migraine attacks may be accompanied by hemiplegia. The nature of the symptoms can be utilized to explore the distinctions among these neurologic disorders. It is important to define positive and negative neurologic symptoms. Positive symptoms involve increased neuronal activity and often manifest as visual hallucinations like stripes or lines, tinnitus, or paresthesia. Negative symptoms occur because of a decreased or absent function and manifest as a loss of vision, hearing, taste, or other senses. Both seizures and migraine auras tend to begin with positive symptoms, while TIAs occur with negative symptoms. We can further distinguish these disorders from one another by comparing their courses, otherwise termed as their progressions. Migraine auras slowly progress from one modality to another over a span of multiple minutes. That is, migraine auras slowly shift from one sense to another. For instance, a patient may first experience a brief loss of vision. Slowly, this vision loss may then be replaced by a tingling sensation across the side of the face. TIA symptoms, when involving more than one sense, typically occur at the same time. Like migraines, seizure auras can progress from one modality to another. However, the shift is much quicker in seizures than in migraines, taking mere seconds to occur. Presyncope, another condition potentially confused with migraine aura, does not actually occur as a conventional aura. Rather, it is characterized by a sense of dizziness. Distinctions can also be made based on the duration of symptoms. Migraine auras often last 20 to 30 minutes. Transient ischemic attacks tend to last less than an hour. Seizures have a significantly shorter duration, usually lasting 30 seconds to 3 minutes. Presyncope has the shortest duration of the disorders that may be confused with migraine auras. They last merely a few seconds before subsiding. Surely, there is an overlap between migraine auras and other neurologic disorders. But an astute clinician can use the nature, progression, and duration of symptoms to make an accurate diagnosis. As a quick review, let's try to identify which condition matches with their matching features. Which condition has a rapid onset of neurologic symptoms but usually lasts less than 24 hours? TIAs, remember? Migraines have a slow onset of the aura symptoms and can last 4 to 72 hours. Which condition has a variable onset and progress quickly through the modality neurologic symptoms that usually last for several minutes? That would be seizures. Okay, which condition does not usually have an aura, but can present with rapid onset of neurologic symptoms that resolve in seconds? If you said presyncope, you are correct. Okay, one more. What neurologic conditions are associated with aura? Migraine, TIA, and seizure disorders can be associated with aura. Migraine aura and seizure aura are usually associated with positive symptoms, while that of TIA is usually associated with negative symptoms. Part 3. Understanding headache pain. Now that we've discussed various primary headache syndromes and their characteristics, we can delve into the central nervous system aspects responsible for pain transmission. Now, let's envision a patient's brain and spinal column. The nerve fibers that carry nociceptive information, that's information about painful stimuli, for the head and neck converge at the trigeminal ganglion, which lies in a space near the top of the temporal bone on the inside of the skull in front of the ear. Before synapsing, in the ipsilateral spinal trigeminal nucleus, which is located in the medulla and is extending into the upper cervical portion of the spinal cord. The nociceptive stimulation and headache pain arises mainly from irritation, traction, or inflammation of pain-sensitive tissues in the head and face, especially the meninges and intracranial blood vessels. Second-order neurons then send axons that cross the midline in the medulla. These fibers then ascend through the brainstem in a special tract called the trigeminal limniscus or ventral trigeminal thalamic. As the name suggests, the trigeminal thalamic tract connects the trigeminal nucleus to the thalamus. After reaching the thalamus, these fibers synapse and third-order neurons run from the thalamus toward the cerebral cortex to relay their sensory information for higher-order processing centers, for example, primary and secondary sensory cortices. It is thought that headaches, including the types we've discussed, arise because of sensitized central pain pathways, such as the trigeminal sensory pathway. Over time, neurons become excessively sensitive to stimulation, a phenomenon known as peripheral sensitization. Nociceptive neurons in the trigeminal spinal nucleus bombarded by abnormal discharges from the sensitized peripheral trigeminal pain fibers can themselves become sensitized, a phenomenon known as central sensitization. Essentially, individuals who experience headaches have increased neuronal activities throughout their central pain pathways, This increased activity results in an increased responsiveness to pain stimuli, which then manifests as an increased incidence of the headaches. The pain information that the trigeminal nerve and nuclei relay is mediated by neuropeptides. One neuropeptide in particular has been shown to increase in concentration in conjunction with migraine headaches. Calcitonin gene-related peptide, also known as CGRP. However, CGRP is thought to work alongside other neuropeptides, including neurokinin and substance P. These two peptides, among others, play a role in a process known as neurogenic inflammation. In this process, CGRP and substance P induce mast cells to release histamine. This histamine release then promotes further CGRP and substance P release, thus potentiating a rather vicious cycle. Both migraine and cluster headaches fall into a category of neurovascular headaches. These headaches arise from a CNS event that causes cerebral and meningeal blood vessels to dilate. This dilatory reaction leads to stimulation of trigeminal nociceptors that innervate the vessel walls. The pain signal is transmitted to the CNS, but also causes release of the previously mentioned neuropeptides and perpetuates the pain sensation. How about stopping for another quiz? The pain associated with headaches sends information to which brainstem nucleus? The spinal trigeminal nucleus. Part 4. When do we pursue further clinical evaluation? Now that we have covered the underlying mechanisms that lead to headaches, let us shift back to the clinical realm. Specifically, let's discuss the scenarios where recurrent headaches warrant further clinical analysis by radiology or lab testing. It's crucial to use these methods to rule out any secondary causes of the headache, such as tumor. Computed tomography, or CT, is indicated when the headaches occur with exertion, when a significant change in the nature of headaches occurs, or if a headache progressively worsens despite appropriate therapy. Cerebrospinal fluid analysis, or CSF analysis, is necessary in only a specific subset of cases. CSF studies should be pursued in a headache if there is a suspected subarachnoid hemorrhage not observed on CT, or if there is a suspected infectious cause to the headaches, for example, bacterial meningitis, especially in an immunocompromised patient. In the former case, it is important to watch for any red blood cells or their degradation products in the CSF, while for the latter, it is important to analyze the cell count, glucose, and protein. Subarachnoid hemorrhages can present with a headache that patients may refer to as the worst they have ever experienced. These hemorrhages often occur because of a ruptured aneurysm, and the headaches typically occur on the same side as or ipsilateral to the ruptured aneurysm. Part 5. How do we treat primary headache syndromes? As we have seen, there are a handful of different primary headache syndromes. Specific interventions depend on headache type and if treatment is aimed at acute improvements, treatment of a current headache, or prophylaxis, preventing a headache from occurring in the first place. Acute treatment for migraines depends on the severity of the pain. When mild to moderate, the pain can be acutely treated with NSAIDs or nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. When the pain is moderate to severe, oral triptans may be used instead as acute treatment. Let's quickly review triptans. The triptans are a family of serotonin receptor agonists, commonly used in acute migraine management. Sumatriptan is the most commonly used. These agents rapidly and effectively abort or decrease headache intensity in nearly 70% of patients. Adverse effects include blood pressure elevations, dizziness, and malaise. Contraindications include hypertension, coronary artery disease, and pregnancy. Risk of serotonin syndrome is considered if a patient is taking concomitant selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, or monoamine oxidase inhibitors. Migraines can also be preventively treated with a variety of medications, namely beta blockers, for example, metoprolol, propranolol, and timolol, calcium channel blockers, for example, verapamil or nifedipine, and angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors, or ACE inhibitors, like lisinopril. Treatment of associated symptoms is crucial. At times, migraines can become so severe that they cause nausea and vomiting. To treat nausea and vomiting associated with migraines, one can use antiemetics such as metoclopramide. Next, for treatment of cluster headaches. The first-line acute treatment for cluster headaches is subcutaneous sumatriptan, a serotonin receptor agonist, alongside 100% oxygen inhalation. To prevent further recurrences of cluster headaches, the drug of choice is the calcium channel blocker verapamil. Finally, for tension headaches, they are acutely treated with acetaminophen or NSAID such as ibuprofen. Preventive treatment for tension headaches is not as well established, but there is some evidence for the use of certain tricyclic antidepressants such as amitriptyline. Unfortunately, overuse of analgesics to treat these headaches can cause additional problems. The most notable consequence of analgesic overuse is perhaps the most paradoxical: the medication overuse headache. This phenomenon can occur with the overuse of NSAIDs or triptans, but it is not common. In the case of medication overuse headaches, resolution occurs with withdrawal of the medication. Here's one more quiz. Can you summarize the first-line management for each primary headache subtype? Migraines can be treated acutely with NSAIDs or oral triptans according to severity. Cluster headaches can be treated with subcutaneous sumatriptan and 100% oxygen. Tension-type headaches is treated with acetaminophen or NSAIDs. Medication overuse headaches are treated with the withdrawal of the offending agent. And that brings us to the end of our discussion on migraines, cluster, and tension headaches. Now, let's recap to see if we've completed our goals. 1. Can you name two distinguishing clinical features for each of the three primary headache syndromes? 1st, migraine headaches. They present with a preceding aura 25% of the time and are isolated to one side of the head that extends from the front of the forehead down through the maxillary region of the same side. Next, cluster headaches. They are short-lived, severe unilateral pain that occurs around the eye or on the side of the head that occur in clusters up to a frequency of 8 times per day. And last, tension headaches are the most common type of headache, and they present with a bilateral head pain, often described as a painfully tight band wrapped around the head, and patients will report that their symptoms are brought on by mental stress. 2. Can you differentiate between transient ischemic attacks, or TIA, from a migraine aura? A TIA presents with a quick onset of neurologic deficits, lasting less than 24 hours, where the migraine aura's neurologic symptoms have a slow onset and can last 4 to 72 hours. 3. Can you name the brainstem nucleus where the pain associated with headache sends information, and also describe the three main stimuli that lead to headache? The trigeminal nucleus is where headaches converge in the brainstem, and the three stimuli that lead to headache pain are irritation, traction, or inflammation. 4. Can you identify and describe which patients warrant a CT of the head or a CSF analysis for headache? A CT is indicated when the headache occurs with exertion, when a significant change in the nature of headaches occurs, or if a headache progressively worsens despite appropriate therapy. A CSF analysis is indicated if there is a suspected infectious cause of the head pain or there is a high suspicion of subarachnoid hemorrhage not seen on CT. 5. And finally, Can you describe the treatment of patients for each of the three headache disorders? Migraine headaches, if mild, can be treated with NSAIDs, but for acute episodes, triptan medications are indicated. Make sure to manage the associated symptoms with supportive therapy and anti-nausea medications. Cluster headaches are treated with subcutaneous sumatriptan along with 100% oxygen administration by nasal cannula. And finally, tension headaches are treated with NSAIDs, and you can consider the use of tricyclic antidepressants. And that's it. Armed with your newfound knowledge on migraine, cluster, and tension headaches, let's go back to the patient from the beginning of our episode. You're seeing a 23-year-old female complaining of headaches. She's also having nausea, vomiting, and sensitivity to light. Her vital signs are normal, and she has informed you that acetaminophen and ibuprofen have not worked. What information can you offer your patient regarding her headaches, and how would you manage her condition? You recognize that your patient has a classic pattern of migraine headache. To help her today, you decide to start some medications. You explain, "I think you have a migraine headache, and I can prescribe some medications now to help you feel better. Something for the pain and the nausea. Once we get this headache under control, we can also get you started with a prescription for a medicine called sumatriptan to take at home if you feel a headache coming on, with the goal being to try to stop it before it gets too severe. In addition, I'd like to have you see a neurologist for a more in-depth evaluation. The goal would be to assure that this isn't any other neurologic condition that could be causing your headaches." Your patient replies, "Let's get started. Anything to feel better." And that's it for our show. Make sure to like and subscribe if you like what you hear, and remember, your feedback helps us to improve. You can enjoy the full BRIC experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. So go check that out if you haven't already. Until next time.